Hello, everybody. This is English 210, podcast number 4, and this is the second half of the voice lesson. I'm Jessica Reed, and let's get started. Now, remember, with every exercise, you're pushed to perform. Sometimes you're pushed past your comfort zone, and that's exactly what I want. An exercise is a challenge, and it's your job to rise up to meet it. Some exercises will come more naturally to different people. That's a given. But never blame your unhappiness with the project on the exercise itself. They're just innocent little rules and raw materials. It's your job to make something out of them. So remember that you're going to be doing these exercises in your journal, and I'm going to be collecting the journals on April 22nd. So do follow along. Listen to these two sentences. He shook hands, a quick shake, fingers down, like a pianist. This sentence by Sinclair Lewis is a perfect example of a cumulative sentence. That's the kind of sentence that presents a main clause, and it could stand on its own, but then it keeps adding qualifying clauses to make it more and more specific. So you could have stopped at, he shook hands. That is a perfectly complete sentence, but a quick shake, fingers down, like a pianist. So there's that. Now listen to this one. And I want you to copy this one in your journal because it's a pretty long sentence and I want you to work it out as you go along. This one is by James Baldwin. It comes as a great shock to discover that the country which is your birthplace and to which you owe your life and identity has not, in its whole system of reality, evolved any place for you. Now, I'm going to read that again. I really want you to copy this in your journal. It comes as a great shock to discover that the country, which is your birthplace, and to which you owe your life and identity, has not, in its whole system of reality, evolved any place for you. Now, when I read that, I had several pauses in it so that you had time to write it down. But there really are only two commas in this entire sentence, and that's between not and after reality. So the phrase in its whole system of reality, that's set apart by commas. The rest is just one big string of words. So if I were to read it the way it was intended to be read, it comes as a great shock to discover that the country which is your birthplace and to which you owe your life and identity has not, in its whole system of reality, evolved any place for you. So notice, look at the sentence in your journal and try to figure out what the core of the sentence is. If you had to trim the fat off of this sentence, what would you have left? Pause me. Try to figure that out and then unpause me and we can talk about it together. So, in essence, James Baldwin's sentence is, your country has not evolved any place for you. So, if you came up with some variation on that, congratulations. You have to fiddle with it a little bit just to get it to sound as simple as possible. But you really want to eliminate, it comes as a great shock to discover, which is your birthplace, which you owe your life and identity in its whole system of reality. So, bottom line, whereas the cumulative sentence could end earlier but doesn't, the periodic sentence can't end until it does. And in the periodic sentence, the middle of the sentence has all this information that delays the completion of the thought. So I'd like you to, once again, pause me and practice writing one periodic sentence and one cumulative sentence. Okay. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the list. Poets often exploit the list. It's called catalog verse, or just list poems. So poets are asked to create or find poetry implicit in the list, any list, objects, because imagery and the sound and juxtaposition and rhythm, all of that reach readers and sometimes make a list more than the sum of its parts. In minimal prose, meaning fiction, the list is often a shorthand way of setting a scene. We saw this with Larry Brown's On Fire, in which the whole first paragraph is a list of things in this room. And then that more detached paragraph is in stark contrast then to the more personal ones that follow. It's no wonder that lists are popular in poetry. They're really demanding, and they require the reader to do a lot of the work, to connect the dots, so to speak. So the reader has to forge those connections that are so subtly suggested that casual readers would otherwise miss. Okay, so we're going to see Alan Lightman use the list really well in Einstein's Dreams, the book in which he imagines interesting alternatives to the nature of time. In the prologue, we see Einstein sleeping in his office, dreaming of different types of time, and then each chapter is a version of a different kind of time. In this chapter that I'm going to read, 15 May 1905, I'm just going to read a few excerpts, so it falls under fair use. Alan Lightman relies solely on the image to produce, to achieve the effect he wants. Listen for parallelism in this section. We're going to see more on parallelism in class. Alan Lightman, Einstein's Dreams, 15 May, 1905. Imagine a world in which there is no time, only images. A child at the seashore, spellbound by her first glimpse of the ocean. A woman standing on a balcony at dawn, her hair down, her loose sleeping silks, her bare feet, her lips. And a little later, he writes, an osprey framed in the sky, its wings outstretched, the sun rays piercing between feathers. A young boy sitting in an empty auditorium, his heart racing as if he were on stage. Footprints in snow on a winter island. A boat on the water at night, its lights dim in the distance, like a small red star in the black sky. A locked cabinet of pills. A leaf on the ground in autumn, red and gold and brown, delicate. And then a little later, he writes, a soft rain on a spring day, on a walk that is the last walk a young man will take in the place that he loves. Dust on a windowsill. Later, Matterhorn, the jagged peak of white pushing into the solid blue sky, the green valley and the log cabins. The eye of a needle, dew on leaves, crystal, opalescent. A mother on her bed, weeping, the smell of basil in the air. Later, a tower of prayer, tall and octagonal, open balcony, solemn, surrounded by arms. Steam rising from a lake in early morning. An open drawer. Two friends at a cafe, the lamplight illuminating one friend's face, the other in shadow. A cat watching a bug on the window. A young woman on a bench reading a letter, tears of joy in her green eyes. A great field lined with cedar and spruce. Sunlight in long angles through the window in late afternoon. A massive tree fallen, roots sprawling in air, bark, limbs still green. And I'm afraid we're going to have to stop it right there just so I don't read the entire chapter. But you do get the idea. He really sets up some images there for you. One thing that I often have my writers do is to write their version of this kind of time, to just write, describe a world in which there are only images, which essentially just means list a bunch of images that, when collected together, sound really cool. Okay, I'm just going to leave you with two little assignments. The first is I just want you to take a piece of fiction that you absolutely love and take a couple paragraphs, maybe even a couple pages, depending on your stamina, but I do want you to copy it word for word, either handwriting or typing it out. There is nothing like copying to make you appreciate the subtleties of something and figure out how a voice is put together. That's part one. The next thing I want you to do is pick a book that, you know, maybe you liked the story, but you didn't really like the style in which it was written. And I just want you to try, make a couple paragraphs, experiment a little bit with how you might write it in your own voice, in a different voice. Give it a shot, and I will see you next week. Thanks for listening.